Cannabis Corner. My name is Lucas Barfield. I am a cannabis researcher, writer, and activist that lives here in Tacoma. And I am joined by my co-host who lives down in Oregon, Uncle Dig. How you doing today, Dig?
I'm doing great. It's cooling off and winter is hitting with a vengeance.
Oh, man. It has been about 2 weeks since we were able to do a show record. I had a little stuff going on in my house with my pipes. The city busted my pipes open, Dig, and we had to put the recording off. And I don't know if you noticed or not, we had an election.
I did notice we had an election, and it seems like there's a little bit of partying going on for a number of reasons. Cannabis did very, very well this election, it looks like.
Yeah, and we'll get to that here in a minute in our news segment, but the first thing we want to do is we want to talk about a interaction we want to have with our audience. We don't want to call it a contest, but we want to start having people send in stories about the first time they ever used cannabis. And the reason why is Dig and I want to share our first time using cannabis, but you know, we want to hear from the audience first. And I think we decided we were going to have five people send in their first time using cannabis stories, and then Dig would share his first time.
Yes, and you can send those stories either audio recorded on your phone or written out to UncleDig4@gmail.com or @UncleDig on Instagram.
Yeah, and if you send in your stories written out, Dig will act them out. And, you know, if you've heard him on the air, he is really good at doing the dramatic readings. So this is going to be a lot of fun. So send in the first time you ever got high from cannabis, which is not always the first time you maybe have used cannabis, but send in the first time you've gotten high either on a recording from your phone or your computer, or type it up and let us send it over and we will voice act it for you and get it on the air. And after we get five, Dig will share. And if we get five more, I will share my first time getting high. And I have to tell you, Dig, I was talking to one of the people I was with the other day, the first time I got high, and it is actually kind of an embarrassing story. So I am kind of looking forward to sharing that story on the air, but I am even more looking forward to hearing from our audience.
Me too. And I'm looking forward to enjoy a little schadenfreude on behalf of your embarrassment.
We'll move on right now to the news. And so as Dig mentioned, we did have an election. And we're not going to talk about the presidential race or anything about Congress, but we want to talk about how cannabis jumped up to now we have 15 legal states that have legal cannabis. And that is adult use, or as some people call it, a recreational use. And then one state came on board with medical cannabis, and that was Mississippi. And Doug and I were talking about this before the show, and it is a really big deal that Mississippi passed medical cannabis.
It's crazy. That is one of the deepest of the deep South states. You were mentioning that it's almost like backwoods Bama just took over a whole state. It is extremely conservative to the point where conservative isn't even the right word.
Yeah, even conservatives say Mississippi is a conservative place. And another conservative place, and so they passed medical cannabis, and it looks like they're going to have the legislature come up with all the rules, so it's going to be a couple years for all that comes out, but it's a big step forward. And it looks like another state that passed recreational cannabis that already has medical cannabis, and that would be another conservative state of Montana, and they passed an adult use system via the initiative process.
And Montana has a really unique opportunity here, because they're going to get a lot of share of these new travelers when there's this travel, this post-COVID traveling boom. They've got beautiful parks and they've got beautiful cities. And I think this is going to attract a new kind of tourist to Montana. So that's pretty cool.
Oh, that is a good point. And that'd be just a great trip to go up there to Montana, some of those national parks, and have a little indica on your sitting around the fire at night in those prairie summer. So really looking forward to the tourism going on in Montana. But another conservative state, and Dig and I said that both of us have not ever been to South Dakota, but South Dakota has passed an adult use initiative. And then there's a little caveat with this, that they are requiring their legislature to come up with some type of medical bill by April. And it's kind of a unique approach.
They're like, we passed recreational. Now y'all figure out medical because we want access. I actually kind of like this approach. If you can't get a medical bill passed, but you can get a rec bill passed, make a medical access bill part of the rec bill. I respect, you know, if that's how you want to do it, be a experiment for democracy and try to do it the other way, because no one's tried it that way yet.
Yeah, nice work, South Dakota. And then, so there was two other really big states that are always in the national scene that passed recreational cannabis, and one of those is Arizona. In Arizona, they tried for their second time to pass recreational cannabis, and it did pass. And there's just seeing my Facebook feed and knowing some people down there, there still is a little conflict between medical cannabis and recreational cannabis as far as the activist goes down there in Arizona. So hopefully they resolve that. A lot of times, as we know here in Washington, what happens is the adult use system comes in and then it kicks out all the medical growers and the medical stores. But that doesn't have to happen. I was just doing a story today on Illinois, where Illinois said, come on in, medical stores first. And Colorado did the same thing. So it's really good news in Arizona. And then the other big state over on the East Coast is New Jersey. And, you know, just knowing politics and following things for a long time, it's kind of surprising it's taken New Jersey this long to pass an adult use cannabis bill.
Well, there's been a lot of disappointment, I would say, from that area of the world when it comes to cannabis legalization. I mean, I don't know about you, but I always thought that New York was going to lead the way with this. And here it is, New Jersey just beating them to the punch. And I'm really flabbergasted that it happened in New Jersey in this way before it happened in New York. I always thought New York would go and then Jersey would follow. But it seems to have gone the opposite way.
Yeah, New York has really been struggling with this issue. They keep trying to pass it through the legislature and it never makes it. I am always writing and reading about this. And they'll say, oh, well, this could be the year that New York passes adult use. And I don't even think they've been able to pass a medical cannabis bill. They might have some type of medical cannabis bill. But I'm like you. It just seems like a big state like New York and having the biggest city in the country that they would have had recreational cannabis like a long time ago. But here we are in 2020 and they're coming along slowly. And I have seen some reports out of the news with Cuomo saying, yeah, we need to pass adult use. Because we were talking about this last show. Once a state on your border passes adult use or even medical cannabis, I mean, the writing's kind of on the wall. The states might as well just go ahead and pass it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, we saw this when Colorado legalized, all the problems that some of the surrounding states, which is funny, even Oklahoma was complaining. And then we started to see those states around there start to legalize. Oklahoma went medical. However, there's still some holdouts in the Midwest. If I'm not mistaken, Kansas is still very conservative on cannabis.
Yeah, I don't think they have a medical cannabis bill or anything like that. And then we reported not too long ago that Nebraska, they tried to pass a medical cannabis initiative, but it was thrown out by the Supreme Court. So they're going to try it again. But I do remember back when Colorado first passed their legal adult use, all those states around there were filing all kind of lawsuits. Because guess what? People in Nebraska would drive from Nebraska all the way to Colorado to get a good quality ounce of cannabis.
Let me tell you, people are driving to Colorado from Texas to get cannabis right now.
Yeah, because, you know, it's hard to find good cannabis in some of these prohibition states, and it's almost worth the drive sometimes.
And I imagine it's getting harder rather than easier with all these droughts that are coming.
Yeah, especially for medical patients. They might want to go to another state because they really need their medicine and they just can't wait anymore. It was happening in Utah. It's happening all over the country. So this is coming along. Hopefully, when we get a new administration, we can get a little federal leadership on this. But another thing we wanted to talk about, and we're going to talk about these next two things, are two initiatives that were passed in Oregon. And I wanted to have Dig and I talk about these. And one of them has to do with psilocybin mushrooms. And the other one has to do with more harder drugs. And I just want to say this, and I probably should get this caveat before every show. But Dig and I both do not recommend or suggest or are saying that using any drug is something that you should go do. We are not recommending other people do drugs of any kind, whether that's cannabis, psilocybin, or any other kind of drugs. Just because we're talking about it and pointing out some issues with these drugs, please be careful. And again, we are not recommending any of these drugs for personal use. So the one about the psilocybin legalization has kind of been mischaracterized as they legalized psilocybin mushrooms. Now, is that true, Dig?
No, it's not even remotely true that they legalized psilocybin mushrooms. Measure 109 specifically allows for the manufacture, delivery, and administration of psilocybin at supervised, licensed facilities. It also imposes a 2-year development period. So for 2 years after this measure passes, the state has to develop this program. Here's the other thing. Some very pertinent safety concerns people had were about schizophrenics being let into the system and some of the problems with psychedelics and schizophrenics specifically. This measure set up a screening system so people suffering from disorders like schizophrenia would not be allowed to take it. This also is not legalizing psilocybin mushroom therapy. This is going to be the derivative. So it's just going to be psilocybin, the active ingredient in mushrooms. Now, one thing people need to know about this is it's not going to allow people to buy psilocybin and take it home. They're going to be taking it under clinical supervision. And while this may be an avenue towards full legalization, I would say personally, this is my opinion, that psilocybin mushrooms are a more powerful plant medicine than cannabis, and they should be treated as more impactful than cannabis. So they should be subject to a little more, I don't want to say control, but I want to say the threshold for education should be higher on the part of the patient, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And you're right. They are a more powerful medicine. And it's real interesting. Mushrooms are an incredible life form. And you're right. They're not actually legalizing psilocybin mushrooms. And I just learned recently that right now in the United States, derivative synthetic psilocybin is a $2 billion industry today in the United States. And so these therapies are going on, and research is happening all around the country. And it's real interesting that they're adding that 2-year development period, because if anybody here in Washington has heard the commercials, here in Washington, you can go to a ketamine clinic and get hooked up to an IV of ketamine and get therapy. So I envision that these psilocybin clinics will be something similar. Well, you'll have to go in and you'll have to go through a process. And even more traditional people who use these medicines, I don't want to say there was like a process you had to go through, but people just didn't give these medicines just to everybody. It is a very powerful substance, so there is a little bit of caution that needs to go into this. And from what I can tell, and I've been going to a lot of webinars and studying a lot of this, that even indigenous people had a system where they would only give these to certain people under certain circumstances for certain occasions. So that is really exciting, though, that this is going forward, because a lot of people are looking into psilocybin as a way to replace some more, I don't want to say harmful, but some more pharmaceutical type drugs like serotonin uptake inhibitors and things like this.
Now, one thing I wanted to say about Measure 109 before we move on, and those are very good points that you bring up about indigenous cultures and some of them using a process of either elimination or a process of of, you know, ritual or fasting before they imbibe these powerful substances. I want to say that the one thing 109 allows for that people didn't really talk about is that people wanting to go through psilocybin assisted therapy would not have to be ill. They could take the drug for spiritual reasons if they're simply, or if they're simply seeking a hallucinatory experience. This just mandates clinical supervision, which, while maybe not appropriate for everyone, I think is better than having no supervision, especially if you're interacting with these substances for the first time.
Yeah, that is incredible. And maybe if we get some more cannabis first time stories, I can tell my first time of using mushrooms. And I tell you, looking back, we probably could have used some supervision, because we were doing things that weren't safe, and you can have a lot of problems on these things. And so I think that's great that they even allow this to people that aren't ill. Let's say you just wanted to try it. You could go to one of these clinics and they could set you up a nice, safe set and setting, as they call it. And you would be able to take these in a safe surround, in safe surroundings, which is great. And I really like that.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what this does for some PTSD therapeutics too over the next few years.
All right. And so our next one we wanted to talk about there in Oregon is the Measure 110. And this is another one that is a little bit mischaracterized out there in the media, but I think is something that's very important. And this kind of decriminalizes drugs that are characterized as street drugs or harder drugs. But as we've talked about on this show, this differentiation of drugs, which is good and which is bad, the pharmaceutical drug is good, but the street drug is bad, we kind of want to move past that model and start looking at these things as something that people use and start looking at a more of a harm reduction model. We found out people are going to take these substances, and we don't want the harm coming from them to be surrounding law enforcement and getting thrown in jail. So tell us a little about this Measure 110, Dig.
Okay. Basically, in a nutshell, it takes possession of drugs under a certain amount that the measure deems as personal use amounts, and it takes it from a misdemeanor or a felony down to a similar violation, similar to a traffic offense. So instead of being subject to jail time immediately, you would be subject to a $100 fine without the possibility of jail time. A person could avoid the fine by participating in a health assessment. Now, some confusion about the health assessment. I don't really know exactly what that health assessment entails, but I do like that they put in place something that you could participate in to avoid the fine. I'm getting all of my secondary information about Measure 110 from Oregon Public Broadcasting. If Measure 110 passes, the state could still use 11 factors that constitute evidence of a commercial drug offense to charge someone in possession of drugs with a felony. This is what I wanted to talk about. These factors include having stolen property or weapons, or like $300 worth of cash or baggies. But there were some other things. I went to the Oregon law 475.900 and into the definition section 161.015 for modifiers that make it a commercial drug offense. And when I went into there, I found that one of the things that they say makes it a commercial drug offense is if the offender had constructed fortifications or had taken security measures with the potential of injuring persons. So home security, if you have home security, like an extra strong fortified gate, and you're in possession of small amounts of one of these substances, you still get a felony. If you're in possession of aluminum foil or other substances like that, even if you're not using it to package it, you could still be charged with a felony. So there are ways for law enforcement and district attorneys to circumvent this law if they so desire. And it's built into the measure.
Yeah, well, when I hear the word fortification, I think about people without a home building these fortifications they build up in the woods. So that's kind of what I'm thinking when I hear the word fortification, but it also probably is home security. But it seems like a way they could say, okay, you have a fortification and you have 3 grams of heroin on you. That's a felony. We're not going to take you to treatment. So all these little extra hoops and things are concerning.
But I also don't know that this will be applied that way. I think it'll depend a lot on police department policy, honestly.
Yeah, so there's a lot of things to work out in this Initiative 110, and it will get worked out as we go forward. But it's reported, and people can look this up, that over in Portugal, where they have this model, and I recently learned Spain in Barcelona, at least in the Barcelona area, has this same model too. In Barcelona, they have 12 safe injection sites. And, you know, the city's not melting down. It still is known as a world-class city, and I expect that the same thing will happen in Portland. But we're just really needing to move past this model where if you have some of these harder drugs, quote, harder drugs, that not only are you having your problems with your addiction and whatever else you're having in your life, but the police come and throw you in jail, and then that's going to ruin the next 15 to 20 years of your life. So,
well, there were reasons in Oregon this was this passed so overwhelmingly. We've had an outstanding issue with availability of drug treatment in this state for decades. We've had usage rates of these, let's call them synthetic drugs, these harder drugs of greater impact in our state that kind of outstrips other states. So this is an attempt to kind of get control on what's become a public health issue. It's not just a criminal issue, and even if you try to make it a criminal issue, it's impossible just due to the scope of the problem here in Oregon.
Uncle Dick's garden update. Hey guys, it's week 3 in my indoor grow, and this is Uncle Dig with a garden update. I got the opportunity to help someone else medical harvest, and they've been busy trimming up the last of my girls. I have only one outdoor plant left drying, and it's mid-October, the time when growers cash in favors like children eating Halloween candy. Hey man, can you come trim for a couple hours? I did water my indoor girls. They have been watered twice this week and are looking fantastic. They are taking off well and responding positively to low stress training. I have only 3 plants in the pot now. 5 was turning out to be way too crowded. I know I said low stress training can prevent cutting into the plant, but I had to cut into 2 of the plants anyway this week. When leaves are growing too close to or at soil level, they can get exposed to too much moisture from the soil. I like to cut off any growth that touches the soil when I water, to prevent mold and to increase airflow through your grow. It is important not to prune too early in the plant's life cycle, but these plants are vigorous and healthy, so I cut off 1 leaf each. It is also important in the garden to follow the rule of thirds. This can depend on cultivar, but you should never prune more than 1/3 of the plant leaf mass off while pruning. When you prune something above ground, it can cause part of the root ball to die. When you cut off too much mass, too much of the root ball dies, killing the whole plant. This is across many species of plant, not just cannabis. I prefer light pruning myself. At the end of week 3, these plants are almost 10 inches tall. I post pictures every Wednesday on my Instagram if you would like to look. Well, that's it for my garden update. Thanks, Lucas. Let's overgrow the world.
All right. Thanks for that report, Uncle Dig. And we took a week off with your report, but now you're back and you've moved your grow inside. Yes. And there was some interesting information there. You talk about the watering again, and we're just reminding folks that the cannabis plant, especially when they're little, really like to have their roots dried out. Because if you keep them too wet, the thing, you will kill the roots. And you need a nice fan going on them, and you need a little heat source to keep the evaporation going. But you really got to be careful with watering. You might think that it's something that you just want to keep it watered all the time, because people kind of associate cannabis with like the jungle or the tropics. So they're like, oh, we got to water the heck out of this thing. But cannabis evolved on the steppes of Eurasia in a more arid sort of climate, like a prairie. So and in the mountains. So this is a more dry climate, and it does get water, but the plant does like to dry out. So make sure you have well-drained soil, and you do the lift test when you want to decide when you want to water it. But one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, Dig, is this thing about the training and the pruning.
Okay.
Because this is a really big topic in cannabis. You can go on YouTube and you can see all kind of things, and everybody has their own methods. You were telling me the other day, you don't necessarily like to top your plant. And when we say top, is each limb will have a node up on top that's the very tip of the limb. And that little part growing, that little piece up on the top is called a top. And when it forms into a bud, we call it a cola. But you're saying you don't necessarily like to top the top of your plant. You like to just let it grow up naturally. Why is that?
Well, that's not exactly what I was saying. What I was saying is that topping is fine. I've topped before. I'm in a current state of my grow where I feel I need to see a few plants just grow naturally to kind of better understand the plant so I can train it better and top it better and more appropriately next time. I didn't do this early on in my grow what growers sometimes call a Christmas tree, which is an untopped, untrained plant that grows up straight like a Christmas tree and has one giant main cola and a bunch of smaller ones around below or up on the plant. I think growing one of these plants can teach you a lot about how the plant grows, how it distributes that growth hormone that causes that large main cola and those smaller secondary colas. I think it teaches you a lot about just how the plant grows. And I didn't do that early on in my grows because I wanted to maximize yield. So I've always topped and I've always done some form of LST, whether that's merely just pulling branches down slightly to expose the inside of the plant to a little more light, or bending it over indoors so that the side of the plant is now the top. I've done all of that, but what I haven't done, which is I'm doing in this grow, is I'm not training and I'm not topping. I am pruning at the bottom to prevent mold. That's it.
Yeah, and LST is low stress training. And one of the ways I like to do that is I call it the Christmas tree method. It's so once your plant gets pretty big and you go to either flower to get it ready for flower, you can take, sometimes I use paper clips and sometimes I'll use other types of wire like a bread tie. And you can take things like a washer, a bolt, or something with a little weight, and you can hang it on that limb kind of like a Christmas tree, and it'll pull it down, and that allows all those nodes in there to get more light. And another way you can do it, and the way they do these in the 502, is they use like a netting. And so you put a netting over the top, and then you can pull the limbs down and do lower stress training. And what I have learned is I used to... And for a while there, I would strip my plant down and just strip all the leaves off and really take it far down to just like a limb and the nodes. And I was doing that for a while, but I've backed away from that because the plants seem to get a little too stressed doing that. And so I have been topping mine when they get about 5 inches tall. You top it once, and then when those limbs get about 5 inches taller, top it again. And so you'll end up with about 8 colas coming up on top growing. But like Dig was saying, if you do the Christmas tree method, you'll just have one, and each one kind of has their advantages. And there are just so many ways to do this. Dig, have you ever done the super cropping where you take a Christmas tree plant like with the one big stalk and then you break the main stalk? Have you ever done that?
No, I haven't, but I have an acquaintance that has had some experience growing up in Washington that has seen it done, and they've had really good results with it. To me, it's a little scary to try to half break it, if that makes sense. I'm scared to try to like half break the limb to increase my yield.
Yeah, and I have actually done it with just limbs, kind of break it off on the top, but I've never done it to the full stalk. So this topping thing and trimming thing, there's so many different ways to do it. Sort of the rule of thumb is you do want to trim the inside limbs, like down towards the main stalk, because all that, it's not really going to do a whole lot. So the idea is you want the most action happening up on the end of your limb, so you want to kind of take off all that garbage underneath there.
Yeah, and it also depends on how big your plants are. Because if you're growing like a little experimental, like 4 foot outdoor plant 1 year in like a 10 gallon pot, you don't really want to defoliate it that much because it doesn't have as much foliage to work with. And it'll drop a lot of those leaves on off when it goes into flower. So it can depend on the size of your plant. Larger plants, you can aggressively defoliate more, whereas smaller plants, you might not want to do that as much because you can overdo it much quicker. But you always want to take the bottom 6 inches on a big outdoor plant and maybe the bottom like 2 or 3 inches on an indoor plant when it gets really established. That way, when you're watering, you're not splashing water up onto that foliage from your grow medium, which even if your grow medium or your soil's pretty clean, there's going to be some microbes in there that are fine for roots that you don't want on leaves. And later on, that could lead to powdery mildew just from splash out from water and stuff and other fungus and stuff like that. It's not good.
Yeah, and if you got those limbs down there towards the bottom, especially on the outdoors, little bugs can hop up from the ground and everything. So you're right. You definitely want to trim it out underneath there. And another thing you want to trim it out for is you want to get some good airflow in there. So you want to make sure you can kind of, if you have a fan, you always want, if you're growing indoors, you always want to have a fan going, but you want to kind of take your hand or something, or I'm blind, so I have to use feel, but sighted people, you guys could look and see, you want to make sure your leaves down towards the inside of your plants are kind of moving with the breeze. So you can kind of keep all that nice clean air circulating through there.
And if you've got any foliage touching your grow medium, just cut it off. You don't want that.
All right, so the final segment of our show every week is It's a Bus segment, and here we look at the drug war and a bus going on around the country or somewhere around the world. And this week we have something down in California kind of similar to what we had in Washington on our show 2 weeks ago. They had a good old-fashioned drug war raid of, I believe it was 20 houses in Union City, which is a suburb of San Francisco. So all around the San Francisco area, they went through and they busted 20 houses. They found over 15,000 cannabis plants, $22,000 in cash, some grow equipment, and a bank account with $250,000 in it, Dig.
Well, that sounds like a cannabis business, doesn't it? So someone was running an illicit cannabis grow and distribution business in the San Francisco Bay Area, and they got busted. And this just goes to show you that when you have a system like California, where, and we've talked about this, large barriers to entry, impossible for small mom and pop operations to make it into the legal market. The legal market charging too much for cannabis as a commodity, forcing people to buy cannabis from illicit operators like this who can offer a lower price for a similar or even superior product. And as long as you have a system that favors that, you're going to continue to have operators like this move in and start decentralized grow operations like this under the noses of state and federal authorities.
Yeah, and I wrote an article on this. It's real interesting. California, back in 2018, Marijuana Business Daily did a survey, and they found that 1 in 5 Californians had bought cannabis on the underground market within the last 3 months, and 84% of those people said that they would do it again. And Colorado is one of these states like Washington who passed adult use, but then took a hammer to their medical cannabis system. So we don't know. These people, some of them, not saying all of them, but they could be filling a medical market that was displaced by the adult use. And let's not forget, all over the rest of the United States, now it is shrinking, but there's states all over the country that don't allow cannabis that you can ship all this stuff out through the mail. So that's our show for today. Thanks for tuning in. If you would like to get in touch with me and give a comment on the show, or if you have a question or something else you would like to talk about, you can contact me at lucasbarfield@gmail.com. Now that's Lucas and there's a K in it. So LukasBarfield@gmail.com. And what's your contact information, Dig?
You can get a hold of me on Gmail at UncleDig4@gmail.com and on Instagram at UncleDig.
And don't forget, send in those first time getting high cannabis stories.
I look forward to reading them, guys, and maybe acting some of them out.
This is Cannabis Corner, hosted by Lucas Barfield. If you would like to get in contact with your host, he is on Twitter at MJIsMedicine. Your musical selection is The Happy Monster by Chubby Jackson and his orchestra, recorded on 78 in 1947. You can find this music and much more at The Great 78 Project, an archive of historical music recordings at great78.archive.org. You are listening to 101.9 KTAH Radio Tacoma. Thank you.